ask him.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Mike Heckinen.
Clerk Administrator Ina Watkinson.
Deputy Clerk Carly Britton.
Mayor David Moore. Are there any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof?
Yes, I have one on 2143.
And Council Haskell, I will declare conflict of interest on 20.1 due to being a member and a volunteer for one of the possible recipients.
They have a microphone up there.
No, they don't.
They should. They're going to introduce themselves.
Good one.
I got the idea they want to be introduced as part of the roll call, I guess.
Oh. Deputy Clerk Carly Britton.
Director of Operations Greg Gostin.
Treasurer Roshan Kantia.
Fire Chief and CEMC Robert Morrison.
Andy Ward, works out of the town.
Okay. Resolution 23-335, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskell, be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the agenda as presented. Any discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed. Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. Delegations and presentations. I'll try Chris Carrier, is it? Or Carrier?
Carrier.
Carrier. Fire, now do I say Mark or Marquee Inc.?
Mark.
Mark, okay. I had seen it on the website. It did have an extra E at one point, so I wasn't sure. But maybe that was another company.
I'm not sure. I'll have to check. First of all, let me thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I would like to point out that earlier today I did receive an email from our company president and asked me to mention that he has a certificate of ownership for a brick with the nameplate to be displayed in a visible location in the McKellar Township New Community Center. And I believe it was signed by you, Your Worship, in December 6, 1981. So our company president does have ties to the community and actually has a block here as well. So at one point you'll be spending a long time here.
Yeah. Well, I would have been on council then. I wasn't mayor at the time, but if it's 89.
It's in your signature.
Oh, okay.
Next slide, please. So what's worse than giving, I guess, politicians microphones is giving a former politician a microphone. I'm a former mayor of the town of Collingwood. I had the privilege of serving elected office from 1998 to 2010, and I chose to leave. And in the last term of council, I did serve 8 months. We had somebody who quit in January of the last term, and I was fortunate to be appointed by my colleagues. They knew I wasn't going to go back for a comeback tour, but to be back into municipal politics for a short period of time. So I certainly respect decision-making and responsibilities that you carry in your office. FireMark was created by a number of retired and semi-retired insurance adjusters. We started with zero clients. We now have about a third of Ontario's municipal fire departments as clients. We are operating in five different provinces. And post-COVID, we are certainly back out meeting in meetings like this and expanding our client portfolio. Our largest client is the city of Kitchener, so almost 273,000 in population. And the smallest client would be the village of Newberry in Ontario, with just under 500 people. Next slide, please. The insurance market in Canada has changed dramatically since I started with Firemark in 2011. There used to be 234 insurance companies, and now we've got 192, 193. There's the top 20 that represent 84% of the marketplace. You may see your own insurer on there. My home in Collingwood, Ontario, is insured with the Aviva Group, so we are in one of the top three insurers across the country. Next slide, please. Almost all property insurance policies in Canada under the additional coverages section carry something that's called fire department service charges, fire department expenses. It just depends on which company, which policy, and the wordings. This is an example of a policy that carries up to $25,000 in fire department expense coverage eligible to be recovered in response to an insured peril. And a structured fire is an insured peril. Next slide, please. There's also a lot of insurers out there that carry a small amount of coverage. $1,000 is something that you will see with a lot of the smaller mutuals in Ontario. There's about 34 of them operating. There's also been some dynamic changes in this part of the marketplace, increasing the coverages to $3,000 and $5,000 in certain sectors. And next slide, please. And next slide, please. It's important for me to emphasize to you and to the community at home watching today is that we invoice insurance companies on behalf of the local fire service and municipality. We're not sending an invoice to the policyholder and asking the policyholder to pay a bill and then get reimbursed by their insurance company. Since 2011, our expectation has always been that the check is received from the insurance company. So the adjusters or retired adjusters who work on our recovery team will work with the adjuster for, let's say, cooperators. If it's a cooperative property that's insured, we will deal with their adjuster and we'll work through the process. But it's once again, it's important for me to say this unequivocally that there is no expectation that the policy will pay and then be reimbursed. The check comes from the insurance company to Firemark and then we send you funds. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Once more, there we go. The standard loan bylaw is something that you have on the agenda for you to look at this evening. And the bylaw is something that was drafted by a municipal law specialist in Eastern Ontario from the law firm Jennifer Savini of Templeman Law. She's a partner. She may be familiar to your clerks because she is a regular speaker at AMCTO. We paid our client and reimbursed our client for the expenses that they incurred having this specific bylaw drafted because we liked it. And it's something that we have now passed on to a number of our clients, especially in Ontario. Next slide, please. Is the bylaw enforceable and legal? Yes, the Insurance Bureau of Canada is on record as saying that the municipal bylaws that are passed are both enforceable and legal. The Insurance Bureau of Canada, as somebody who represents the insurance industry coast to coast to coast, may not exactly be favorable to insurance companies having to pay out on this coverage, but it is something that they have acknowledged that is both, once again, legal and enforceable. Next slide, please. I want to emphasize first, before I get into this point here, is why is the bylaw necessary? The bylaw is necessary because the insurance contract is written in such a way where it does require local legislation to unlock the coverage. And that insulates the industry from a large loss incident going back retroactively to try and recover expenses. So essentially, the day that you pass your cost recovery bylaw, then you can access the coverage and unlock the coverage that was contained within the insurance contracts. I've gone over this with your chief and senior staff, but essentially what we would like is a copy of your standard incident report. And so I walked them through that process. And we can do that even in more detail once you become a client. We receive the standard incident report. We have a database of, well, we have hundreds and hundreds of policy wordings. So we pull up the policy wordings. We'll look at who the contact is. Once again, we'll use the example of cooperators. Who is the adjuster for this area? cooperators, we will reach out to them and we'll do the detailed invoice, we'll do the detailed reports that that particular adjuster would like. You could imagine with 190 some odd insurance companies, everybody seems to like things done their own way, not in generic ways, so we've modified our systems to accommodate that to increase the likelihood of recovery. The average recovery is about 14 weeks. The shortest recovery has been 8 days, and the longest recovery has been just under 4 years. And that was a non-residential fire that did have a maximum payout, so we had to wait for the occupancy permit to be issued and then a listing of all the bills before there was a recovery for the fire service. But in that particular case, it was a township in Ontario, and we were able to recover $34,000 in fire department expenses for that township. You received 70% of the funds recovered. We retained 30% for our work. If you receive nothing, we receive nothing. There is no annual and there is no minimum. If your chief is unsure that it's an insured peril or recoverable fire, we will look at the file, and if it's not recoverable, there's no cost for us to review the file on your behalf. Next slide, please. The monies recovered stay within the fire service budget for three broad categories: public education, next slide, please, and personnel training, next slide, please, and capital purchases. So we can get into a very long discussion of fees versus taxation and the municipality having authority under the municipal law for taxation. And if a fee is a fee, then the fee stays within the department that has the fee or cost recovery. Otherwise, it could be deemed to be an indirect tax, which then you don't have the authority to do. That was decided in 1998. The Supreme Court case was URIG, E-U-R-I-G, and also the province of Ontario has opined on it as well. So we've protected you the best that we can by putting it in our contract under Section 5 that the funds stay within the fire service budget that we recover. Next slide, please. Once more. God bless the province of Ontario for giving us natural persons powers in the early 2000s that changed the municipal act from being prescriptive to really the test is reasonableness. Is now the actions that you take, can you pass the test of reasonableness? Is the municipality reasonable in its actions in passing and that bylaw to unlock the fire department coverage in an insurance contract to which they're not a signatory to? It says fire department service charges under statutory condition 8 of the Insurance Act. You are allowed to make a claim against the policy if you're entitled to those funds, which you are. And is it reasonable to pass the bylaw when the policy burden says you have to pass local legislation to unlock the coverage? So you meet the test, well past the test of reasonableness. Next slide, please. What's more? I hope we understand that with COVID, there's been some significant change in the insurance industry. One of the nice things is that in 2022, it was one of the more profitable years for Canada's property and casualty numbers, and this was the highest rate of return on equity since 2003 and 2004. Next slide, please. The premium that you see is much like your municipal budget process. You are doing the best that you can to forecast what your expenses are, and yet there is an expectation that those funds will be expended throughout the calendar year for your budget. Well, in establishing the premium for your insurance premium, the insurer, of course, is pooling the risk with all the people within their client portfolio, but with covering claim costs, premiums are also calculated to cover taxes, operating expenses, and expected profits. The fire service charge is a fixed cost. It is not a variable cost. It's not subject to inflation. So the cost to replace your home and contents is subject to inflation. And we've seen some inflationary pressures, especially with supply chain issues over the last two years. The fire department costs were the same probably 5 years ago as they are today, and likely to be in 5 years. They have already calculated this cost into the premium program and you're recovered on this will not affect the premium rate that the policyholder is being charged. Next slide, please. There is no deductible. Our policy, when I was hired, our program, they asked me to go through it. I wanted to have a program that caused no harm or foul to the policyholder, your constituents, your community members. I know that when I served, I didn't like to have phone calls where people were upset about things that were beyond their control. So this has no deductible, and it all, next slide, please. It also does not affect the amount of money that they're entitled to. So if they are entitled to $500,000 in costs to rebuild their home and replace the contents, and there's $5,000 of fire department coverages, there's $500,000 for the policyholder and $5,000 for the municipality. It does not decrease to $495,000. Next slide, please. A lot of your constituents may ask you, if we pay property taxes, which include fire department charges, why should we, are you double dipping? Are you going after something else? Let's put it the other way. Just as property owners have paid taxes for the fire service to be well trained and ready to go, they've also paid for fire department service expense coverage and their property insurance policies. All we're doing and all we're asking you to do is to ensure that the insurance industry is honoring the contract for which they're collecting a fee for and that their insured has signed. When it's Easter time or Christmas time, I liken it to the fact that when we go to the grocery store, we buy extra groceries for those people who need it, and we put that food in it, usually in a bin at the end of the cashier line. How would you feel if you went back at 10 o'clock at night and looked through the window and you're restocking the shelf? You purchase something for a specific purpose. Same with this coverage. It's for a specific purpose. The industry needs to honor the policy for which they charge their policyholders. Next slide, please. Hey, thanks for telling us about it. Why can't we do it ourselves? This might shock you, but insurance companies and the industry doesn't really like to cut checks. So they are private businesses. They like to protect their bottom line. I'm a capitalist. I believe in capitalism as well. But I also believe if you pay for a coverage, it should be paid out. We do have large urban clients who have insurance adjusters on staff within the treasury departments. Those are the legal liability specialists or the slips and falls specialists. They are not property experts. Our company is established by property experts, and they've asked us to do the cost recovery instead of them investing within their own systems. Next slide, please. This was a tornado in Angus near Base Gordon in 2014. The president of our company actually lives about 2.5 kilometers from here. And Essex Township was our first client. Next slide. So there were 103 properties involved in this incident. Next slide. There's 41 different insurance companies dealing with this. A lot of people would think there might be 5 or 10 or 15 insurance companies. No, there's 41. A company is not going to go in and sell all of those folks in subdivision A policy. That's not how the industry works. The risk is spread amongst a group of insurers. It took us 11 months to receive the incident file. You could imagine if you had something here, you have your citizens to deal with. We understand that. And we have 2 years to recovery on an incident like this. And so it took us another 10 months to receive the funds from 41 different insurers. And we were able to recover not only for Essex Township, but the 4 neighboring departments who also assisted in this natural disaster. Mayor Terry Dowdle is the former mayor of Essex Township. Sandy McDonald is the current mayor. If you wanted to reach out to Sandy, she would give you a glowing recommendation. I'm not told her I would say that tonight about our company. And former Mayor Terry Dowdle is now the MP for Simcoe Gray in my riding. He was also a director of FCM and very supportive of our program. Next slide, please. And there's some of Robert's colleagues from across Ontario. They are holding what we call the Mickey card. Inside the Mickey card is a check. And I can assure you that when I show up with a check, I don't have to make an appointment. People do come up at meetings to accept a check. But having been in elected service in the past, I understand how much the fire service needs money. And it brings me great joy to drop off a check to some of these many needed departments across the country. And that's it for my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anticipated a lot of my questions. As I said, I was checking it out on the internet. And the one on taxation, that came up over and over again. And they're already paying taxes for fire services, and I think you explained that too. And I think the key too there is that their policy isn't affected, that their rates won't go up because of the incident, and that the municipalities are involved and taking part of the insurance company's money.
And the other aspect of that, Your Worship, is the fact that there are expenses that are incurred only when the fire service is called. So if you're using the phone, if your water is metered, if you're paying your paid on duty volunteers, there are expenses that are only incurred when those trucks and vehicles roll and your personnel respond. And those are the recoverable expenses.
Yeah.
So anything that's defined as a consumable in response to that incident is subject to recovery, to the limits of the policy.
No, I think that's too, the fire chief can also speak to this, that there aren't many programs out there where there's money coming in. We can even access money for fire departments.
Yeah.
We've tried over the years, and there's not much there.
Yeah.
And I know we put up different stations too, but we were on our own with those. So I'd be interested in getting your take on this too. And did I see McDougall on there?
You did.
Okay.
Yeah, you recognize him.
Yeah, it was small, but I thought I recognized it.
Yes, this program came recommended from.
Stand up here, Chris.
This program came recommended to me by Chief Schubach from McDougall. They have been signed up for it and successfully using the program for. Brian LeDuc was there when they first signed up for it. I know that Carling as well has just voted to go with FireMark as part of the cost recovery vehicle. So we are slightly ahead of the curve because they only have a third of the province, but you can see that the momentum is there with the company. It does offer some very good opportunity to recover some of the costs that then can be recontributed to the fire department and potentially decrease what our overall asks are in the future as well, from a budgetary perspective. So.
Council, questions? This is all new to us, but I know it's strong on here. McMurph found teeth as well, and some of the local municipalities are all part of this. So, I mean, certainly we can reach out and get their response as well, but I think our fire chief has already told us that, and you already indicated we'll get glowing reports. But certain names that you dropped, yes. Yes, go ahead, Councilor Zulak.
So, this is a yearly fee that we pay?
There is no annual fee.
No fee.
Our company only receives money if you receive money.
Oh, okay.
There is no annual, there is no minimum.
Oh, okay. So it's just that there's a claim put in and then you receive money, then?
If you receive money, then we receive money.
Oh, okay.
If the policyholder does not put in the claim, then we do not put in the claim. We piggyback on their existing claims process. Once again, because I was asked to look at it with my municipal lens on, but we didn't want to harm the no policy discount that other folks receive with their policy premiums. So if they don't make a claim over a period of time and then receive a reduced deductible on their first claim. So we didn't want to take that away from them, but if they're making a claim, then we piggyback on that.
So there's, we don't have to pay anything like to be a part of this?
No.
Okay.
Other questions? Councilor Ryan.
The slide here in front of me is very small, and you probably can't read it. I was confused by this one about the $1,000 limit for charges which the insured is legally responsible. Can you say that again in a different way, perhaps? I didn't grasp what it was when you were saying it, so.
So the insurance contract is written in such a way that you have to create a legal requirement for them to pay.
Okay.
So you can imagine with 190 companies, it's just worded differently with many different companies.
Okay.
So by passing the local bylaw, you are then making the legal requirement for them to pay.
Okay.
So that unlocks the insurance coverage contained within that policy.
Okay, thank you. I get it.
Okay, I can even open this up, I suppose, to the public, and I don't know who's on Zoom, but. Okay, well, thanks for coming. We have a bylaw listed here, whether we deal with it or not, but it's later in the agenda, so we'll be discussing it in more detail at that point. But thanks very much for your presentation.
My absolute pleasure, and I mean, what a dream view.
Yeah. So it compares to Collingwood, does it? The view?
It's lovely. We had no windows in ours.
Oh,
okay.
We have resolution 23-336, moved by Councillor Zumach, seconded by Councillor Peckin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received a deputation from Chris Carrier, National Accounts Manager of Fire Mark Inc. All the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried? Thank you. Resolution 23-337, moved by Councillor Haskins, seconded by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby moved into Committee of the Whole at 6:57 p.m. to discuss transfer station items, stickers, etc., with the transfer station attendant, Angie Ward. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, Andy, put you on the spot here. We'll turn it over to you, and we may interrupt, and the public may. It's a committee of the whole, so.
Okay.
We wanted to start with the stickers. That was controversial at the time, and I know we talked about cards like we had in the past, but then it's morphed into stickers. That's what you're using in surrounding municipalities. We wanted to get your opinion on it, whether it's working, whether we should be reviewing the whole situation.
Right now, I've had some people that have started to do it, put it on. There's been, from the word go, there's been a lot of confusion on it. I've had people ask me, where are they to go on the cars? When's it to start? The idea when I brought it forward was something so when their vehicles are coming in from a distance, I can see it on the vehicle, card or something would stand out, sticker in this case, where it'd be easily identifiable, and so it'd be a case of I'd see the vehicle, even if I didn't see who was driving it right away, it's like, okay, that person should be here. And most of the people I know by looking at them are their vehicles, and that I can recognize who it is coming in and that, but in summertime, especially now, it's about to start, it's going to get busy, and at which point then there's a lot of vehicles in, and it's to keep track of it. Another thing that was brought up to me on people who rent, there's several people I know top of my head I can name that are renting it now, so they don't get a sticker. But like Dustin Wheeler's just down the road, he rents. Jeff Stevenson's another one. I hope these people don't mind me saying them, but these are cases of people I know that are renting. There's also, I have people questioning about like the trailer parks. How's that to be dealt with? And that, like the people in there. And there's a whole bunch of questions. The idea was to try and make it easier and quicker and things move freely. Like if I saw a vehicle that came in without a sticker, I could quickly mark it, go over to it, what are you doing here, that sort of thing. And as they stand now, they're really hard to see on a vehicle.
Okay.
They're too small, they should be colored of some sort. Ideally, I would say get in, like, look what the other townships are doing, get in line with what they're having, that sort of thing, because the internet can work against us or for us. Like, Scott had the first ice in this year, I know that. And Scott was saying, I'm getting a lot of traffic here, it's because people are talking on it. It goes the same with the dump and that. If they know that there's a weakness, people from around the other areas and that will come in and exploit it. If it's on a busy day, and it's just one person there, you can't always catch everyone.
Okay, I'd be interested to know, because I've seen the one from McDougal, and it's a very similar size. I'm not sure how they're dealing with it, whether it's a problem. I know, as we said, we started with the cards over the years, and I thought that's where we were going, and then I find out that it's gone to stickers, so I'm just not sure. I haven't seen any survey of what the other townships are doing. So are you aware?
Ideally, the idea I had was is when I worked at Honda, there was a small card about the size of a credit card in your vehicle. You were driving up to the gates. They were able to see that. You could drive straight in. They didn't see that, they were flagging the vehicle over, going, what are you doing here? So it was something about the size of a credit card is what I was looking for. Could be put in the vehicle, so okay. It would be easy to be seen. It was just a way to try and make it easier if it's one person working out there, control the flow.
Okay. Now, with the card as well, there's more information that could be on that. I think Councillor Cuffman can speak to that too. You were probably involved when the cards first came out. And so it's not just saying Township of McKellar on it. There's actually more information, is there not? And jump in here, Ina, if you
yeah.
will.
Yes, the pink cards did have the person's name on it. We would usually issue two of them, one for husband, wife, who are the owners. They would have the name on it, would have the roll number on it, and would have the date that it was issued.
Okay.
And address.
And address, yes. And the address as well.
Now, the interesting questions you've raised, whether it be sticker or card, you're saying anybody renting didn't receive one, then I'll turn this back to staff and see who actually received it. Was it just landowners? Would they pass it on to a renter? How did that actually work?
The landowners would be the ones that would have got them because they got sent out with the tax bill. Carly and I were discussing that today. Her and Lori worked primarily on getting these done. She had mentioned that it was kind of a rush to get it done because they were to go out with the tax bills. While we were discussing today also with Greg, right off the bat, I said they're too small. And it's definitely something we've got to look at moving forward to improve on what we have. Definitely a color, something that's going to be spotted right off the bat. Additionally, we did say that just because if somebody doesn't have a sticker, if they still got their pink card, we're obviously should be still accepting the pink card because there are some people get their tax bill, it's paid by the bank, and they take the envelope and stick it off to the side, don't open it, don't know that there's anything in there. You go, exactly.
I'm afraid of saying what the date is on it.
Yeah, I was going to ask what date's on that.
Yeah. So we are looking at how we can improve it for the next year. Definitely, if we look at stickers, they do have to be something that is more easily noticed, so that they can be picked off right from the beginning. Just before I left the township of Carling, what they had, now they had a combination because they have parking permits as well, because they have issues with people, kayakers and things, using the public beaches, and it doesn't allow parking for the people who are paying the taxes in the area. They have a card that would be maybe 4 inches by 6 inches, and it hangs off the back of their mirror, and it's clearly visible, like right off the bat you can pick the Carling logo on it, and that's what they get with their tax bill every year. They get a new one and it hangs off there, but it's very noticeable.
Councillor Cuffman.
I found the cards were very practical and effective because for many reasons, they're very visible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not anything that the staff have to work on and renew every year. They don't expire. And the only ones that get sort of updated are new roll number, people who have purchased properties, or if they have one that needs updating. I found they were very practical as well because they had the name and the address, so you could confirm immediately if the individual was a McKellar taxpayer. And as well, it helped at the transfer station for issuing receipts. The individual hands you the card, the money, they go dump, you can multitask, do other things, write out this receipt while you're doing those things. You have their name and their information. You don't have to sit down there and listen to them to repeat every letter to spell their word, their name. So I thought they were very practical in that respect as well.
As far as the receipts were going.
You can hold that and still see.
It's all right. As far as the receipts and that go, I'm filling out the whole thing. All it is if I'm asking them, when they dropping something off, if you want a receipt, I'll fill it out. And I carry the receipt book right with me at the time. And I'll fill it out, do it, and then if I have to, it might be a minute or so later, come up here, sign here, there's your receipt, go, and then that's it. I'm trying to do it. And as far as the cards are good. But when I got there, there was less than half the people have the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been more people who've moved into the area since then. And it's the system is just each year, the less it was renewed each time, the worse it got each year.
Yeah.
And
now we have the added concern, as you say, with renters. That wasn't as popular back then. So, again, how to deal with that. And not just the short-term renters, but people who are long-term, too, and they're not receiving these
mm-hmm.
stickers creates a problem.
And the trailer parks would be even worse because of the sheer numbers.
Well, I'm not sure how the trailer parks actually work, whether it's the individual owner who takes
mm.
all the refuse from the park at once,
yeah.
or the individual property owners in there, or renters, do they travel? And I'm not sure where you're getting at the transfer station.
First year of COVID, it was the parks themselves were bringing it in. And since then, some of them have, when it opened up more, they were allowing the people come in. And most of them I recognized by then already. Like I had worked Henry's, I recognized a few people from there and other people from around the area I have seen. So, but again, there was a bunch of issues that people were asking me questions for that I just did not have the answer to.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically I started going, you have to ask you guys.
Yeah. So when they were coming from River Lake, for instance, or one of the others, would the owner actually pass over the sticker or a card so that they could take that when they, or are they just coming with nothing?
What do you mean? The
Well, the individual comes from a park, a trailer park. Do they have anything to show at all then?
I've had them where they came up and said, I'm a new person, and that I'm in here, and I got shown once, here's the receipt for whatever park it was. I've had a few cases of that. Had a couple times where the owner of the park was actually going to the dump himself, and he said, come here, I'll show you where everything is. He introduced you to Andy, and
yeah.
It was a case of that. And this is a new person that was introduced that way as well. But
okay.
It's kind of loose, especially like if I take holidays or something like that,
yeah.
Somebody comes in. Preventing arguments, it's just streamlining it.
Yeah, well, we'll make a note of that. No holidays. Okay.
Where River Lake is concerned, they do, Bonnie does notify us at the beginning of every year, and she gives us a list of the people, and they, each one of those, because they're permanent trailers in there, each one of those people do get the two cards, or did get the two cards. I was off on sick leave when these were done, so I don't know if anything was sent to them as far as the window stickers are concerned, but they always got the pink cards. Now, if one of those trailers changed hands during the summer, a unless Bonnie or Henry sent them into the township office, no, we wouldn't know. We wouldn't know. When properties change hand, we usually would send out, like when we get a deed, if we get the deed, with the person's address on it, we send out the stickers to them so that they've got them.
Okay. Councilor Ryan.
Andy, do you believe that there's widespread abuse? In other words, people coming to the transfer station that are not entitled to, and or can you guess how many, what percentage of them are not entitled to?
I do know I've had occasions on a year ago, on the Monday of the main 2-4, I had a lady came up who was very busy that day, and she had dropped her stuff off, and came up at the very end and said, "So glad you're open. You're the only transfer station open in the area." And at which point as well, "Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Please go." But there is abuse. I do know that. There's people who are coming from other areas and that.
Okay. Like regularly, or like every day you're open, or?
Well, the one guy has referred to me Mike, and he usually shows up on long weekends. I believe he's referring to you.
Did you call Mike?
No, I just... He refers to me as Mike, so it's
He must have made an impression.
And I've had people that they've made mistakes, whereas, you must be new, where are you from? And I'm Bayside. Isn't that like Georgia Bay?
Yeah.
So... There is abuse on it, and I know that the other people, I've had people say, is that I'm pretty sure he's not from around here. It's, well, I'm busy. I don't have time to jump on it right now. And it's either more help or find a way to make it so it's more organized. I feel that if we're in line with the other townships and all that, it makes it harder for people to jump and abuse the system.
And do you know what was on at Seguin? Because we had some people say that Seguin is open without anybody there, any attendant.
That's true.
Is that true?
I have heard that from several people. The people who pick up our recycling, I was recently talking to them. Their comment was that, I believe it was Carling that they had just been to, was a mess compared to ours.
Yeah.
And so, and I do know the Seagull one, I've been there once or twice with contractors, and they're not monitored, and they are a mess.
Yeah. Well, thank you
for
being there.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, I mean, we can look at cards moving forward and something larger, perhaps. What do we do in the interim? Because these are out there right now, and we have another tax bill going out, I guess. When does that?
That'll be in July.
July? And I don't know whether we want to consider something that's different, because even the people who got them said they weren't prepared for them, or they used any kind of excuse they can, I guess. But they went in the garbage and that sort of thing, and they didn't know they were there. So I'm not sure how you notify people if they don't check the actual contents of the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do what we can, I guess. But if you think it should be revisited this year, because otherwise it's just hit and miss, as you say.
At this point, we're already starting into it. If we could get everything organized so it would be up and running by when the fall assessment comes out, that would be great. It would also be slower in the year by then.
Right.
Some of the people have gone away back down south or wherever. And if possible, that would be great. If not, I guess it will be in the new year to try and get everything straightened out and lined up how we want it. Or you want it.
Yeah. You mentioned too, we've talked about the trailer parks and that, but with the children's camps, how are they operating? Do they look after their own? Do they bring in a dumpster? Or how do they, because it used to be they would dump at our transfer station when it was actually a dump, but are they all on separate now?
To the best of my knowledge, they're all on separate. They have their own bins that get picked up.
Okay, and they don't come to our transfer station then? No.
seen any the last year or so. There's been no one coming in when the camps are up and operational from that, unless they're going into the tent to get new coffee cups.
Yeah.
Other than that, I haven't seen them.
They likely go to McDougal, the landfill.
They'd have a contractor.
They have a contract with either Weeks or Adams or...
Oh, okay, okay.
That they go in and pick up the bins.
Now, other issues, and you touched on one sort of with the their reuse tent. I saw it on Facebook that that was going up. Was Greg, what did you say, next week? Or
nope, this week.
This week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't know, this is your opportunity, Andy. You talked about location before. Is that a good spot to have it? Or do we get rid of the tires that are there first? Or the return bottles? Or is it just too crowded in that area?
The tent, it worked last year. The returns, if the charities keep up on it, so that doesn't build up, that shouldn't be a problem either.
Well, I'm just looking right now that they have the one company that's picking up the bottles, right?
Yes, we only have the one organization that's picking up the bottles, and I think they're pretty much on top of it most of the time.
Are they?
The last little bit they have been, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
I have had a couple other groups saying that they were talking about it and said they were going to talk to you guys, but I haven't heard that back anything from anyone on just the talk.
Okay. No, we did have three organizations that were involved in it, and two of them were not following through, and the one organization that does take care of it, when it became their turn, they came back and they had a huge mess. And at that point in time, we told the other two organizations that if they weren't going to fulfill their commitment, it wasn't fair that one organization is doing all of the work and then the funds are to be split three ways. So we've just brought it down to just the one.
Okay. Being looked after, that's good. Councilor Tyson?
Just wondering why the tent is in the location it is now, not back at the far corner there that used to be previously.
Oh, I was waiting for this one. Let's see. Start here. I've been keeping track of the brush loads came in as either a truck or a trailer. And the bag leaves, and these are for the days we were open. There was the first one taken there, the loads, so there, and that's where Greg and the crew cleaned it up. And then from there, there's the second bunch, it's been cleaned up again. And from this point here will be when we're starting our dirt. There's been two loads taken out. I don't know how many or how long they were. Generally, it's two trucks, a backhoe, and three operators is usually what it is, and for however many hours. But on the one day there, I got over 100 bags of leaves in and 12 loads of brush. And so, like, there's a lot coming in. There's a lot of bush lots that have been opened up, and that's ours. And I need a space to put it. If it's going to be open for that long, I need a big space for the leaves and the brush, and that's why the tent was moved where it was. Greg and I had talked about that, and that was, we agreed on that, that it was in a better spot where it is now, and it gave us more room for the brush.
So that was after the brush got located to that location compared to where it was previously. So it was just a natural progression of how things transformed out there. And it's crowded in that back corner now with that. What about the tires? Like, have they been hauled out recently? Or
not sure. Greg's aware of it.
So who calls out the bins, like when the bins are full? Does the transfer station attendant, or?
I'm the one who's calling them in, except for the electronics. Great, I'll let Greg know when the electronics is getting full, he calls them in. But I'm calling in the recycling, and I'm calling in the bins that Adams are taking, so.
So the recycled bins, are they ever, well, I guess we have to discuss the whole recycling process, you know, where that's heading anyways. But is it that the recycling bins get full so that they, people can't recycle before they get picked up? Or has that worked out pretty good that they're hauled out on a...
The other day was the first time in a while that they didn't get to it right away. I try to, with the recycling, try to give them about 4 or 5 days notice. That's about my best time. Adams is very good. I usually, if I call it in, within a day, 2 days, the bins will be changed out.
Okay, so there's no issues with the, any of the recyclable bins or any regular bins not getting picked up promptly?
I call them in, at which point it's out of my hands. That goes into Adams or it goes into Bracebridge. Like, I'm calling it in going, this should be good. Like, I was, when I got caught stretched out last weekend, it was because I was trying to get it through to the end of the weekend so I'd have a full empty bin for the start of the long weekend. So you have to sort of do a juggle act there and that.
Okay.
So, and it got filled up, and so for about a half a day I had to send them, if they wanted to get rid of their recycling, it was like, I'll give you the option, there's a bin up at the end you can use, you can put it in there. But it's going to a landfill at that point. Because it's going from, instead of, because I had no recycling, it was going into one of Adams's regular household bins.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So,
well, you mentioned some other things, different times I've been in.
Yeah,
you mentioned a counter at the gate coming in to keep track of vehicles.
I think it'd be a good idea to know how many vehicles are going in through there, because I've seen in summer where I've had 15 vehicles in there and running around the madhouse, and like you're moving, trying to keep people moving and going. And I think it's a smart idea, just to have an idea. You know how many people live in the township, so even if they're going twice a week, you should be able to get the numbers and then look at the numbers of traffic going in, and that would also give you an idea if people are abusing the system. Because if it's way over or way under, it's way under, it's great. If it's over, then we definitely have people abusing the system.
Okay, turn it over to Greg, I guess. What are one of those costs, or can you rent those? You just string the hose across? Or?
No, well, we just depend what you want to do and,
right,
and why. So we can, we have the electronics, we can count cars. But
then what do you do with the information, Greg? Right.
Just to have, I guess. I think Andy's doing a good job out there, but we have to get discouraged, and we don't have to sweat too much into this, but the flow is pretty good out there, like you're saying. I don't know where else we can improve. The site, everybody has to remember that site's small for the amount of people we have in that site.
Yeah.
I mean, we got brush, we got leaves, we got his the scrap, we have all that. And it's not the greatest layout for flow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've tried to tweak it. We tried, you know, Mike and I moved the brush over to the one side, make it, and that really did help because the trailers aren't stuck out in the middle of the laneway like it was there for the long time. So realistically, I think we've done a great job now at providing the amount of room that we need. We just have nowhere else to go. So we're right now at the point of making the best that we can with it. Moving forward, after I get rid of these tires, here's one thing I'd like to see is next year, starting January 1st, we don't accept any more tires. The new Pro system says they got to go back to the manufacturer, or to the supplier.
Right.
So after January 1st of this year, I recommend that we no longer accept tires. And that'll free up some more room in our transfer station. We're one of last of probably two or three municipalities in this entire area that accepts tires. So I think as of January 1st, it'd be smart to go and put some on that part.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, why wait until then?
Well, it's up to, I'm just putting it out there. If we want to make it, whatever, when we get it cleaned up, September 1st, whatever, or when it's cleaned up, when I get them in to get it cleaned up,
yeah.
As of that date, big sign goes up, we could cancel it right then and there.
Yeah, well, I know it was done with the construction waste, and I'm not sure how that went over, whether the construction waste is still coming in or not, but it wasn't accepted anymore at some point.
You know, it's not a shock to everybody because, like I said, we're one of very few municipalities that accept tires.
Right.
So it is what it is. They're harder to get rid of than they were before. There's no money in it for us. We're just doing it out of the goodness of our heart, accepting these tires. For what? For why? I don't know. When they can take them to the producer. So as of January 1st, they can take them there. That's what I'm saying.
So you have a solution right now, you said, to get rid of what's there?
Yep.
Even the ones with the rims?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, we're good. So that used to be an issue.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, there's money in scrap. So if they're on rims, it's not a big deal anymore. They'll take them. So
okay.
Once they're cleaned up, which is going to be soon, probably by July 1st, there'll be no more tires accepted.
Okay.
And then that gives us this year ways out of the winter tires, switching over to summer tires. That's all out of the system. Everybody's got their tires done up to this point, and then that'll be it.
Sounds good.
Right?
Now, Andy had a couple more points that he's forgotten, I guess, but you mentioned about the gate down below or something, that it wasn't working well or it should be fixed. So do you want to expand on that?
The gate down below is very heavy. It needs to be repaired or replaced. Like, to physically move it, even when it was in good repair, was a hard deal for me. And like, it's a heavy gate. It was made for something to have be run by a motor, and the motor was weak. So, and I know the people from Adams Brothers who were coming in there, they had said to me on several occasions that it was heavy and awkward to move, and that something like that should be replaced or repaired or something. I'm not sure. It needs to be dealt with.
Okay, is that on Greg's radar? That's the gate leading down below where they go in and pick up
the bins and stuff like that, yes.
Yeah.
You know, money will fix anything.
Right.
So that's all it takes. So just we'll get rid of the gate that's there and put a swinging gate in, and then that solves that problem.
Sound good?
Yeah. But it's like, again, it's just money and,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Okay. Well, if there's concern, and we don't want somebody.
Well, you know what? They don't use that side. It'd be nice to use that side. It's not like, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, we do have to. It always has been a, like Andy says, a heavy gate to move.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to. Anybody out there, Adams or whoever, shouldn't have to go through that just to move that gate. It was that bad. So.
Okay.
So I would suggest maybe a couple $1,000 in there and we get a new gate. And there's a lot more than just that gate that needs repaired out there. Just about every gate and every fence that the transfer station has needs to be repaired. So.
Okay. Councillor Zulak?
So, and down in that area, Greg, where the gate is,
mm-hmm.
Is there a lot of stuff down? Is it just Adams that go down there to get the thing? Like, I was thinking for the leaves and the brush and that, is there any way, would it make sense to get the people to go down there? dump it? No.
No, not really, no.
I was just thinking that gave you more room up top.
Yeah. Where they are right now is not bad. Yes, it'd be nice to have the tent in that little area we built. However, the tent does work well where it is. The shoppers have somewhere to go out of the way, and people are still coming in and out. It's not bad where it is. It works. Where it is now, it works. So.
Cut back the brush before the May 2-4 weekend. And if the brush stops, then you have a spot for the tent back where it was. But as it stands now, the latest brush is set up. That's going to June 15.